Reading today will be from 1 Kings chapter 11, verses 1 through 4. Now King Solomon loved many foreign women, along with the daughter of Pharaoh, Moabite, Ammonite, Edomite, Sidonite, and Hittite women from the nations concerning which the Lord had said to the people of Israel, "You shall not enter into marriage with them, neither shall they with you, for surely they will turn away your hearts after their gods." Solomon clung to these in love. He had 700 wives, who were princesses, and 300 concubines, and his wives turned away his heart. For when Solomon was old, his wives turned away his heart after other gods. And his heart was not wholly true to the Lord his God, and was the heart of David his father. You may be seated.
Some of you parents are answering the question to your children right now. How did he have 700 wives and 300 concubines? Just tell them, you'll explain it to them later. It is great to be with you. You know, I really appreciate the feedback on this series, Leaving God. And I want you to know that that the ideas for it and much of the information came from my friend Eric Lyons and the lectures he did at Polishing the Pulpit on that. But when I was planning the series and I came up with the title, Leaving God, as my wife pointed out to me, I didn't really think about that being on the sign for 4 weeks, Leaving God, and then we're on part four. So I guess the people that may take our sign real literally are worried about us as the church, Leaving God. But we can't get it done. This is the fourth part. We've been trying to do it. Fortunately, the sermon is not about the church leaving God, but they're about how we all as people can leave God. And it's really about the idea that we don't want to leave God, but what are some reasons why that people leave God, that nations and congregations can leave God, and what are some ingredients for restoration to bring us back to God? In the past 3 weeks, we've looked at some reasons from 1st and 2nd Kings and 1st and 2nd Chronicles in this study. And we're going to add two more to this list today. But we've noticed that ignorance is one of the big reasons why people leave God. And so we must combat ignorance with knowledge of God's Word. And then there's stubbornness and pride. And how stubbornness and pride often go together. And they must be combated with compliance and humility. And ungodly leadership can be a big reason why people leave God. And then that must be overcome with godly leadership who lead us back to God. And then last week we talked about how we can reject the abundant grace of God. And then when we reject God's grace, that we are departing from our only hope. And then how suffering is a reason why people leave God, and it's also a reason why people can come back to God. And so this morning we're going to think about a couple more reasons why people leave God and a couple of ingredients for us to consider in thinking about being restored to God. Before we do that, we've started each lesson with looking at a story from these books. And today I want to look at a famous story about Ahab and Jezebel. Most of you are probably familiar with those names, especially that wicked woman Jezebel. He's kind of notorious in the Old Testament for being so wicked. When you think about the story of Ahab and Jezebel, it's often accompanied with the stories about Elijah, because Elijah is going to be the prophet who's going to have so much interaction with the wicked king Ahab and his wife Jezebel. We won't be able to look at all the stories and the confrontations, things that involve, for example, 3.5 years of drought because Elijah, through the will of the Lord, had brought upon a drought. And this caused Elijah to be the most wanted man in the nation. And Ahab sought him everywhere but could not find him. And in the midst of seeking Elijah, he put many prophets of God to death. It's also in the context of that famous scene at Mount Carmel where Elijah and the 450 prophets of Baal go toe-to-toe. And all the prophets of Baal are executed by Elijah and the Israelites at the end of that, because that Baal could not prove to be God. But God brought fire down from heaven and consumed the altar. But Elijah, after that, will soon flee when Jezebel seeks his life. And so we think about Ahab and Jezebel. And why was Ahab, and by the way, the prophecy that will end the story, is that both of them would have their, not to be too grotesque here, but their blood would be licked up by dogs. That was the prophecy. They were both going to die a death so that it would be shame upon their name. And they would have an unfortunate ending. And at that time, before that will all take place, in chapter 21, you notice I have that in specially emphasized there at the bottom. I want to read verse 25 and 26 because we don't have time to look at all the things that happened with Naboth's vineyard and all the stories between them and Elijah. But in this summary statement, at the end of verse 20, chapter 21, in verse 25, it says this: "There was none who sold himself to do what was evil in the sight of the Lord, like Ahab, whom Jezebel, his wife, incited." She provoked, she incited him to do these evils. He acted very abominably in going after idols as the Amorites had done, whom the Lord cast out before the people of Israel. Why did Ahaz do such wickedness? Well, one of the big reasons was because of his wife Jezebel. You see, she was a foreign wife, and her father's name even had Baal in it. So it's no surprise that when he marries her, that he begins to serve the idol Baal. And she incited him to do many evil things, which leads to our first significant reason for apostasy. And that is the people that we ally ourselves with. That is the people that we make friends with, that we become allies with, that we're talking about ungodly alliances. When we get involved in ungodly alliances, this pulls us down. And it often led the children of Israel and the nation of Judah into all kinds of problems. For example, they made alliances with wicked nations sometimes when they were supposed to depend upon God for their military protection. They felt fearful and threatened, so they looked to wicked nations. For example, in 2 Kings chapter 16, you can read the story in that context about how Ahaz sought help from the ungodly Assyrians and how he even would sell some of the temple treasures into their hand. In 2 Chronicles 16, you can read about Asa. Now, he did not trust the Lord, but went and founded an alliance with the Syrians. I mean, in other words, they made a deal with the devil. They could not trust in the Lord for their protection, so they made alliances with these wicked nations. And in every situation, when they chose to go against God, when they chose to turn against God, and they chose to seek protection from these other foreign powers, God rebuked them, and condemnation is going to come upon them. You see, there were also alliances with idols. We may not think about it like this, but if you stop and consider it, Jesus talks about this in the Sermon on the Mount, that you cannot serve God and mammon, you cannot be loyal to one, And to faithful to one and not to another. That your alliances determine your allegiance. And so when they chose to leave God, when they chose to leave Yahweh, and they chose to serve Baal and Ashtoreth and all these other gods, Moloch and things, what they chose is to seek the protection of those foreign idols. You see, really it was a great temptation for them to want to go after these idols, because these idols promised things to them. For example, Baal was the god of the weather, and so he's often connected with agriculture. And so when you think about Israel and their need for the rains and their need for agriculture, and that's probably why, it's probably why Elijah, through God, will bring about 3.5 years of drought to show them that Baal was not the true God, that Baal could not bring the rain they sought from him. You see, serving idols was really about, where is your loyalty? Where's your loyalty? Also, it was about alliances with foreign wives. Joel read from Solomon in 1 Kings chapter 11, or about Solomon, and how Solomon had 700 wives. And most of these wives, we of course are blown away by that, but a lot of that had to do with, not as we think about love and the desire for these women, as much as it was so many in countless number, we might think of, had to do with all these political alliances and expanding the borders of his kingdom and keeping all these political ties intact so that he did not have to fight all these nations. They often made treaties, which were often subject in ancient times, to marriage. And so he had a lot of these marriages which bound him with these foreign nations, and they bound him with the foreign wives who led his heart away from God. Sad to think about. This great man who had dedicated the temple, who had built the temple, Solomon. But when he was old, because of all these wives, his heart was turned away from God. You know, we don't know. We don't know if he turned back to God. We can hope that Ecclesiastes, which is likely written by Solomon, we can hope that that is a record of his thoughts at the end of his life, after he had gone astray, and he comes back and he writes this great book of Ecclesiastes, telling about how he had sought pleasure and he sought success in all these areas. And he says it's all vanity. Vanity of vanities, he calls it. And he ends that book with a summary saying, the whole duty of man, the whole duty of man, man's all, is to fear God and keep His commandments. You see, Solomon hopefully turned back, and hopefully that book is referring to that idea that he wrote that at the end of his life before he turned away. But we're not sure. See, his heart was turned away because of these foreign wives. The point I want you to see is who you ally with matters. And I use that term ally because I want you to get, this is not just a common thing, but who you are loyal to, who you become closely partnered with, who you make ties with, whether it's your business contracts or your close friendships, who you run with, who you marry, who, all these things greatly affect your faith. In fact, we must observe that godly alliances are a great ingredient for faithfulness. That if we run around with Christian people, and if we come to church and associate with Christian people, that it strengthens our faith. That it builds us up. And in fact, as we often know, God did not intend for there to be any Lone Ranger Christians. But He built us to live and work in communities called churches, congregations. We need one another. And so it's important for us to understand that evil companions, 1 Corinthians 15:33, corrupts good morals. That if you run with the goats, you're going to smell like the goats, as we have often heard said. It's important to know that they will influence us. In 2 Corinthians chapter 6, the Bible talks about this same thought. And it's probably alluding to close bonds of contracts and things and partnerships that we get in, like marriage or working arrangements and all these type of situations. And it says in verse 14, do not be unequally yoked with unbelievers. For what partnership has righteousness with lawlessness? Or what fellowship has light with darkness? What accord has Christ with, and this is an idol, Belial? Or what portion does a believer share with an unbeliever? What agreement has the temple of God with idols? For we are the temple of the living God. As God has said, I will make my dwelling among them and walk among them. I will be their God and they shall be my people. That's why it's so important for all of us. You know, we teach this lesson to our young people, right? We teach them that you got to be careful who you run with at school, and because we understand that friends are one of their most primary influencers upon our teenagers. And it's important. And we think about who you date and who you marry. It's so crucial. Because of that partnership and that connection that you're making and the influence. You want someone that will help you get to heaven. But you know, it's true for all of us. When I think about apostasy, one of the key factors of why people leave the Lord and leave the church is because they begin to drift away in their relationships with other church members, the other Christians. Yeah, it's important to come to Bible class because in Bible class you have friendships and associations with that closer group oftentimes. It's important to do fellowship activities and to have your kids involved in our youth program and our fellowship activities and to be participating in things like we have tonight of a shower for a young couple that's getting married from our church and participating in things at a fellowship level at our church, because then you have people who care about your soul and who watch over and love you and encourage you. And you can almost guarantee that when people leave the Lord, that it's been a slow drifting away from those ties. And oftentimes there are ties that they're also being established in worldly ways, with worldly friends. Some new people that have come into their life, maybe because of work, maybe because of other relationships, that are pulling them down. And so we have to think about our alliances. It's so true that in the Old Testament, when they made their bed, if you will, with these foreign nations, these foreign wives, God brought judgment and condemnation upon them because they left the Lord. When we do that too, when we become partners with people that are not godly, it's going to harm our faith. The second thing, though, and the last of our number of things that we're looking at, is fear. Fear is a big reason why they left the Lord in 1 and 2 Kings and Chronicles. They left the Lord because they were afraid. In the first king of Israel, Jeroboam, it says about him in chapter 12 of 1 Kings that he was fearful that the people would go back down toward Judah to Jerusalem after he had divided the kingdom. And so because his fear of the people in verses 26 through 30, because he feared the people, he set up two golden calves. Why did he begin to leave the Lord? Because he was afraid of the people. In fact, it even says that he feared for his own life and his own power. You see, he was afraid. So he set up these idols. Fear can motivate us to do all kinds of wrong things. This is incredible, but there was a queen who had become queen because she was actually the mother of the king who had died, and then she gained back the power. And she is going, in 2 Chronicles 22, 10 through 12, it tells about how she is able, because of her fear for her own power, she kills off all the royal heirs. But one man is able to hide Joash, who was a young man, and he was a royal heir, and he is hidden away and protected from this wicked queen. But why does she kill all the royal heirs? Why does she kill people that are related to her? Why does she do this? Because she's fearful for her own power and for her own greed of wanting that power. Fear screams for us to bail when courage calls us to trust. I just talked about in the first point about how these foreign nations were where the kings looked to for their solution, for their protection when they were threatened. So what would often happen is one foreign power would come in, but instead of going to God and praying like Hezekiah does, when Hezekiah has 180,000 Assyrians about to destroy him, Hezekiah prays to God. He prays for strength. He says, "We're not going to go to a foreign power. We trust in you." And God sent an angel and struck down the Assyrians. But most of the kings didn't do that. Most of the kings, when the foreign power would come, they would then make alliances with these foreign powers, Egypt and the Syrians and all these other powers. Why did they do that? Because they were afraid. And when you're fearful, everything says with your faith to trust in what you see, to bail. But courage calls us to trust. We walk by faith and not by sight, 2 Corinthians 5:7. You see, the answer to fear is courage. And in 2 Chronicles 15, verse 8, The Bible says about Asa that he is going to trust in the Lord. Notice verse 8. As soon as Asa heard these words, the prophecy of Azariah, the son of Obed, he took courage. He took courage. When he had heard this reassuring words from the prophet, when he had heard the word of God, it says he took courage. And notice what he did. He put away the detestable idols from all the land of Judah and Benjamin and from the cities that he had taken in the hill country of Ephraim. How did he have the strength to put away all these idols? He took courage. It takes courage for us to live today. There's a story in 1 Kings chapter 17 that I think is helpful on this. There's so many of these stories, and I picked a few of them that I just wanted to emphasize. And this is one that is pretty famous and one that is so interesting. About when Elijah goes down to the widow of Zarephath. And look with me to 1 Kings 17. And the story begins in verse 8. The word of the Lord came to him and says, "Arise and go to Zarephath, which belongs to Sidon." And so he goes down to this city. And when he arose, he went to Zarephath. And when he came to the gate of the city, behold, a widow was there gathering sticks. Now this is during the drought. This is when it's really poor and it's a very difficult time. And notice what this lady's doing. He said, "Bring me a little water in a vessel that I may drink." He says, "Give me some water." Notice what she says. And she was going to bring it, and he called to her and said, "Bring me a morsel of bread in your hand." And she said, "As the Lord your God lives, I have nothing baked, only a handful of flour in a jar and a little oil in a jug. And now I am gathering a couple of sticks that I may go in, prepare it for myself and my son, that we may eat it and die." They were preparing their last meal. They were down to just a little bit of flour and a little bit of oil. And she says, "I'm out here gathering sticks to make a fire. This is going to be our last meal. And you want me to give you bread?" Now, this is a great story about trust. What would you do? If you were that impoverished, if you were that hungry, and you only had a little bit left, and the prophet of God said, "Prepare it and give it to me. Give it to me." It takes faith, doesn't it? Let's read what happens. So Elijah said, "Do not fear. Go down as you have said. But first make me a little cake and bring it to me." Sounds kind of selfish, doesn't it? "Bring it to me. Give it to me. I want to eat it first. And afterward, make something for yourself and your son. For thus says the Lord God of Israel, the jar of flour shall not be spent. The jug of oil shall not be empty until the Lord sends rain upon the earth." The whole point of this story is you've got to step out in faith, in trust, before God blesses you. Think about that story. One meal, one last piece of bread for you and your son. The prophet says, "Give it to me. Give it to me. If you give it to me, your flour and your jar of oil will never become empty until the Lord sends rain." And the widow of Zarephath prepares that last meal. She gives it to the prophet. She trusts in the Lord. She trusts in Elijah. You see, that takes courage, doesn't it? That takes a lot of faith. How do you overcome fear? Through courage, through trust. Throughout the book of Acts, we see that the apostles are going to move throughout with great faith. Throughout the early chapters of Acts, they're constantly being threatened. "Don't preach about Jesus. Don't tell others about Jesus." Peter and John have their life threatened. They're put in prison numerous times. But each time after they have suffered, each time after they've been beaten, they counted it worthy. They counted it joy that they could suffer for His name. And they continued to do what? Continue to preach. They continued to preach. because of courage. You see, four basic truths that we have recovered in this series. You can be faithful to God. You can leave God. You can turn away from God. You can leave God quickly. You can do it quickly. But I want you to know this morning, you can still return to God. And then we've talked about these reasons of why people can leave God. And I want you to think about in your own life, what reason are you struggling with, and what ingredient do you need to combat that struggle with? Maybe you're struggling with suffering. Maybe you're struggling with rejecting the grace of God, and you need to accept God's grace. Maybe you're struggling with friendships and alliances, and you're making too many friends with people in the world, and you need to conscientiously, intentionally start to make more friends with Christians. Maybe you're struggling with fear, and you have to choose to move forward in courage. But think about it, because here's the thing. You, and I really believe this, you don't want to be unfaithful to the Lord a year from now. But if you don't make changes, what you think will never happen might happen. You can be unfaithful to the Lord a year from now if you don't make some changes in your life, if you need to make changes. If you see some of these areas that you know you're not doing well in, it's not just always going to be all right. If you don't make changes, you can leave the Lord. Satan is powerful, and he'll continue to use that temptation. He'll continue to use that weakness. Because I guarantee you, Satan knows when he looks at your list, and he looks up there and he sees, all right, this is, and you put your name in, and he is weak with this area, Satan's going to continue to pound it until he gets you to leave the Lord. You see, we have to think about men like Stephen, the early disciple of the Lord, who he preached this same message that I have preached. He preached about these kings in the nation of Israel, and about how the nation of Israel had always been going astray. And at the end of that sermon, he says of them, "You are just like your fathers. You are stiff-necked. You haven't changed from the days of Israel of old." Just like them. And they stoned him for it. It took courage, it took fear to say, "You're just like your fathers." Now here's the thing for us. What I want you to hear this morning is that we can be just like our fathers, just like this nation of Israel. We can suffer we can go down the same path they went down as a church, as a family, or as individuals. And we can be just like that crowd who will stone Stephen. When we hear the message, we can say, "That's not me." We're not like them. We're different than them. And they got upset at God's messenger and they stoned him. I don't think anybody's picking up stones this morning. But I want you to really think about your life. I want you to think about, are you rejecting the message or are you hearing it? Because you and me, we can be stiff-necked, we can be hard-hearted. And we don't want anybody to be unfaithful a year from now, 6 months from now. And if anybody is unfaithful this morning, we're going to sing a hymn to encourage you to come back, to be restored, to want to rededicate your life. Or if someone's not a Christian, if you want to accept the grace of the Lord, then come as together we stand and sing. I am resolved.